Hello, everybody. I'm Zach Shellhammer. Welcome to my Adventure Life podcast and vodcast on Be Alive. For this episode, we have Brandon Palahniuk. Brandon Palahniuk is one of the top anglers in the world. Yes, that's right. Last year, he won Angler of the Year. This guy catches tons of fish. He knows a lot about what it takes to make sacrifices in order to follow your passions in life. I think it was a really interesting conversation. We did have some technical difficulties towards the end, but bear with me. I'm a one-man crew trying to manage a bunch of cameras and microphones, and we're not in a studio. We're out in nature. But hope you enjoy this one. Over the years, I've met some of the top outdoor and adventure athletes in the world, and through the My Adventure Life series, we're getting to see how their passion has fueled their careers. I really hope you enjoy getting to know some of these people as much as I have. Yeah, welcome to the new podcast. This is a brand new thing. Yeah. You are the very first person to be on this podcast. How do you feel about it?
Honored.
Yeah.
Honored. I feel like I can't tell if I was just like the easy guinea pig or if I was like an actual valued, you know, like first guest. It's debatable.
That is debatable. No, we are super honored to have you. I'm super honored to have you. We've worked together on a couple little projects in the past, but this is our first time to sit down and just hang out, have a cup of coffee and chat. For those of you that are checking in through the podcast app, you might hear a little bit of a river in the background. It's because we are at a beautiful spot. We're sitting on the back of my Jeep Wagoneer on the Siuslaw River in Oregon. And I felt like it would be fitting to take Brandon down here to the water.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. We actually saw someone catching a fish while we were setting up, didn't we?
Yeah. Which makes it even that much tougher to sit down and do a podcast when you got people catching fish down the river.
Seriously. All right. So when I was doing research for this podcast, one thing I started looking up was fishing facts, and just to, you know, so I could get some knowledge around the topic.
Yeah.
But I wanted to know how knowledgeable you were with fishing. Are you ready? We're going to put you in the hot seat now.
Oh, gosh.
Are you ready?
Yeah. All right.
Start with some trivia. The world record bass comes in at A, 17.3 pounds, 20.3 pounds, 22.4 pounds.
Well, there could be some discrepancy in that. June 2nd, 1942, George W. Perry in Georgia caught a 22-pound, 4-ounce bass. But then Manabu Kurita in Lake Biwa, known as Biwako from the locals in Japan, caught a 22-pound, 5-ounce bass. But technically, due to IGFA rules, it has to be 2 ounces bigger to be certified as a new world record. So they're tied at 22 pounds, 4 ounces, or 22 pounds, 5 ounces, however you want to look at it. But there's also has been recorded a fish that is pretty famous in California named Dottie. And some guys, Mac Weekly, actually caught one on Lake Dixon in California that was 25 something. I can't remember exactly what the ounces were. It was like 25 pounds, 3 ounces. Dottie is actually in the record books, I believe, 2 or 3 times in California at different weights. And then she later passed after a couple years after those guys caught her. They found her floating in Lake Dixon. But that technically would be the world record. It was an unfortunate thing that they ended up snagging her when they thought they had her inside the mouth. It was outside. And so they ended up not claiming it.
But unbelievable.
See, how's that for an answer?
It sounds like you know your trivia.
Oh, wait, it was supposed to be multiple choice. C.
C, 22.4. And you are correct. All right. Well, you're very knowledgeable on that target. And that actually brought up a couple questions. But that is remarkable that, so the technical world record hasn't been set then in 86 years?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, technically, 1942 is the original record. And then Manabu Kurita broke it, I believe, like 2010, 2011.
Yeah, wow.
Or tied it. Didn't technically break it.
Wow, that is amazing. Okay, so I got a true or false for you now. Okay. And now I feel like these questions are way too easy because you just home run that one. All right, so true or false, do female bass build and guard their nests and then keep watch of the hens until they've hatched?
I'm going to call overall majority. I'm going to go false on that one.
And why is that?
So technically, the males will, majority of the time, they'll guard the nest. So the males and the females will actually kind of both make the nest. Sometimes it's a combined effort. And then the female bass will lay the eggs, and then the male will fertilize those eggs. And then the female, typically after she dumps her eggs, may stay around a day or two, but then they leave. So the females, they're not there very long. They come up, they take care of business to, you know, kind of rebuild the fishery, and then they go on. And the male is actually there to stay, and they will guard the nest until the eggs hatch. Once the eggs hatch, you know, the little tiny fry, and they'll actually stay with them, you know, for several months sometimes.
Very cool. So bass fishing, and you sound like you're very knowledgeable on this topic, but bass fishing isn't something you can go to school and get educated, learn about, like, these types of things.
There's not like high school or college curriculum for that kind of thing.
Right.
It's mostly either self-taught or through organizational magazines like Bassmaster or FLW magazines, Major League Fishing, those types of things.
Right. And how did all this start for you? Because I was listening to your Angler of the Year speech. Congratulations,
yeah,
by the way.
You.
That's amazing. It's quite the accolade to have in the back pocket. But I was listening to your speech from that, and you mentioned that you grew up basically, like, I mean, not really immersed in the fishing culture, but also, like, you had an outhouse or a bathroom and kind of a lot different lifestyle than you may be living now. Do you want to tell me a little bit about that? Like, how did you get into bass?
So I was really fortunate, born and raised in Idaho, in the northern part of Idaho around Coeur d'Alene and kind of the surrounding areas, and grew up with a family that loved to be outside. And I think that was just partially because of where we grew up and then who my family was and their background. And, for the most part, was raised by a single mother. She had a long-term boyfriend that helped out for a while, but it was actually a family friend. One of my mom's best friends married a guy that fished local bass tournaments. And at that time, I didn't know anything about bass fishing. I loved fishing, but I didn't know that you could actually go target a specific species. And so once I learned that, I got set up, went out on a boat with him. And pretty much from that day forward, at 8 years old, I decided that I wanted to fish tournaments for a living. And I was going to put, all my eggs in that basket. And all my decisions were pretty much based on that one direction of my life. If something interfered with my path toward fishing, I usually disregarded that and kept moving, and was always kind of drawn towards the things that I felt like would help me go in that direction I wanted to be at.
Yeah, so it sounds like you knew from a very early on age that bass fishing was going to be
your
thing.
Yeah, that's a really difficult thing to explain to your teachers, when all the other kids are saying they want to be police officers or doctors or lawyers,
yeah,
and you say, I want to be a professional bass fisherman, you get some funny looks in Idaho.
Fishing in general is usually a very family-oriented sport, and it's kind of something that you're taught at an early age, typically, for most Americans, and they kind of just keep it as a hobby for most of their life. But you realize from early on that you could turn it into a career?
Yeah, I don't think that I really knew everything that encompassed. But once I found out that, there were tournaments, I was very competitive, so I loved that aspect of it. And then the fact that there were actually people making a living at it, it was like I didn't even have a choice. That was what I was going to do.
Wow, that's amazing. And so when did you actually become good at fishing? Because there's a big difference between, people that like to fish and people that can turn that into a career. Like, that's a big step. Like, how did that happen?
Yeah, I think it's an ongoing process. I'm still learning, still adapting and evolving. And I don't think that's ever going to end, which is part of what draws me to it. Part of what I love so much about the sport. But I would say really kind of around 1920, after I graduated high school, and I just started putting more and more effort into it. I had more time. In high school, I'd drag my boat to school and I'd go fish for a couple hours after school and then go home and do my homework. And, you know, once I got into college, I was able to have more time and spend more time on the water. And the more time I spent on the water, the better I got and the more I learned. And, you know, was able to start to formulate my own ideas of the way that fish move through different bodies of water. And and it's just, it's continually gotten better and better. I feel like I'm, like I said, still learning.
Yeah, this is super interesting. So, like, for me, I'm trying to wrap my head around, like, what is the process for going from hobby sport to professional? Like, what are the, like, the three main steps that you'd say you'd need to overcome in order to become a professional fisherman? Is it just being good at fishing?
I think the number one thing is sacrifice. It is so time consuming, and it's not easy, right? There's hundreds of thousands of millions of people that fish,
right.
But there's a very few amount of guys that actually make a living doing it. And so that, I think that sacrifice aspect of it is tough. And, you know, I don't know that there's not like a physical feature that makes you better. I'd say a lot of it's mental. You gotta be mentally tough. You know, whether it's sponsorships and business, you're going to hear a lot more no's than yeses, or, you know, just things change. You know, it's a lot different. When I was growing up wrestling, I knew that if I outworked everybody else, I could win 75% of my matches just because I was in better shape and outworked everyone. That's not the case in fishing. Right? We're essentially competing against other anglers, but we're not. We're more or less competing against the fish. And that kind of sounds cliche and funny, but we don't have control over what they do, and it's really hard for us to understand what they do. So just having a general, like, basic understanding of fish habits and movements and seasonal movements and just how they react to Mother Nature, because they don't live their lives based off of time clock. And as humans, we tend to do that. You know, our lives are driven by you know, we have to be here at this time and certain things. They don't really have that. You know, sun comes up and it goes down, and they live day to day, and they adjust to whatever those conditions are. You know, sunny, cloudy, windy, all those things have effect on them.
Yeah. Wow. So do you regret some of the sacrifices that you made?
I would say there's always like a level of regret, just because you miss out on a lot of things. Like, I missed my own brother's wedding because I had a tournament. But when you have 9 professional events a year, and then something like that comes up, you can't miss those events, because you're essentially be like walking out of work. Dang. Got someone's trying to race down the dirt road, I guess.
Oh my goodness.
you can't worry about those things. You have to know going into that it's just part of the lifestyle, and you're going to miss some of those things.
One thing that has set you apart from a lot of the other fishermen, I'd say, is your content. You made really cool fishing videos. It's something you're known for.
Yeah.
In fact, one of my buddies, who's a local bass fisherman, I was asking him, like, oh, like, who's your favorite fisherman? And of course he said your name, and I was like, oh, I was like that's awesome. I was like, what do you like about him? He's like, oh, that guy makes the best videos. It's so cool to watch him fish. And so I think that's something that's really set you apart, but that's also kind of becoming the normal for professional athletes these days, is like, you got to be good at content and you got to be good. And of course there's going to be those exceptions that are just so incredibly talented that they might not need to be as good at social media, but that's always got to be part of it, I think. And from my perspective, you're kind of one of the first guys pioneering that in the bass space specifically.
Yeah.
But do you often find that could be hard to balance making videos and catching fish? Like, is it often where making the video kind of motivates you to get out for the day, or making the video prevents you from catching fish?
You know, there's two sides to that. I document all of our tournaments, right? And documenting is very different from creating.
Right.
To go out and just document something is not difficult at all.
Yeah.
Because it's happening naturally. And so for me to go out and just document the tournaments, what I've figured out the last couple years doing that is that it actually ends up helping me a lot. Either I can go back and I can look at footage, I can see what I did wrong or what I did right, and I have that as a tool. But then I also find myself talking to the camera and talking to people, and I'll actually catch myself like talking my way through what I need to do.
Yeah.
And so that just happens naturally, where if I didn't have a camera, if I wasn't documenting that, it would just be in my head. But sometimes like saying it out loud and thinking it triggers like a different process in your thought process. And I think it's actually helped the last couple years doing that. And, you know, to go out and actually like create a video can be difficult sometimes. One, it's time consuming because you have to go, you have to shoot it. And then once you shoot it, you also have to edit it. And, you know, those things take time, and time is just something that we don't have control over. You know, we only have a set amount of time of that. So balancing that, can be difficult, but it's something that I enjoy. Yeah. So it's not as difficult when you enjoy it. You know, if it was something that I didn't enjoy, I probably wouldn't do it. I wouldn't try to pioneer that. But I feel like there's a huge growth of a younger generation coming up in the fishing world, and just where the entire world is at technologically. You know, there's a lot of technology that allows people to consume that content, and everybody's consuming a lot more content a lot more quickly. And I like putting that out there for people. And I don't, for me, the value of it is the comments that people give back, you know, that feedback that people say, just like you're talking about your buddy, like, man, I love him. Why do you love it? Cause I love watching his videos. You know, that's what it's all about for me, is like having that, I guess just a little bit of that recognition of people enjoying something that you either create or document, or, you know, just following that journey. I love telling a story. Cause I feel like everybody has a story, but not everybody is given the chance to tell that.
Yeah. Do you think there's luck, or are you superstitious?
So luck, that's probably like one of the biggest questions we get, right? Like,
seriously,
it, for people that don't understand fishing, a lot of times they just think it's luck, right? Because they either grew up going down to a dock with their grandfather or their parents or something, they throw out there and they just kind of sit and wait. What we do is not as much luck, and when you are talking a 4 or 5 day tournament, that takes a lot of luck out of it, because you have changing conditions, you're adapting, and so the longer the tournament goes on, the less luck's involved. You have to put yourself in the right position in the right places. But where luck comes into play, or things that you can't control, is I may catch a 7-pounder instead of a 4-pounder. I can't control which one bites.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a part that, you know, a guy can get lucky and catch one big one, but he also had to put himself in that position or in that area at the right time to make that happen.
Okay. The reason I was asking is because I suck at fishing, and I can't tell if it's just bad luck or if I actually need to get better at this stinking sport.
I just keep blaming on bad luck for now.
All right. Yeah. So luck is a thing, everybody. Everybody that's terrible at fishing like me, luck is a thing. Every day, and one thing that I've found is that, like, every day we kind of get to choose to be hopeful or not. You know, we can be hopeful in life and the certain things that are coming up and the certain circumstances we may be going through, or not. But I've also found that kind of to be true in fishing, like, with having hope before every single cast. Do you find that that's something that you've noticed as well?
Yeah, that's 100% true. There's a big cliche in the bass fishing world of like, confidence is your number one lure.
Oh, wow.
And so that kind of lends to that,
yeah.
That same thing, you know, of like being hopeful that you're going to catch one on your next cast. And it's true. You have to have, confidence, because there's a big difference between going through the motions and actually like living in the moment. That applies to fishing and life in general, I think.
Yeah, for sure. What advice would you give somebody that might be struggling with that sense of doubt in their life?
Just in life in general?
Yeah.
Man, that's a deep question. I think that everyone has to, like, everybody has something to offer the world. And as long as it's something that is good or something that's positive, you should offer that to the world. Like, don't be afraid to put that out there. Now, if it's negativity, you can keep that in your closet at home, because I don't want your negativity out there in the world. We've got enough of it. But I think a lot of that negativity comes from people's insecurities or just their, like, inability to show what they do have to offer. And so I'm a big believer in, like, how you look at life is how your life is going to be portrayed. And I think that's kind of true in this case, where there's a lot of people that get down on their life, when really their life's probably not that bad. You know, sometimes you have to take a step back and put it into perspective, and realize that it's not so bad. You know, if you're looking at all your friends on social media and you think their lives are, like, perfect and great, understand that they have all the same issues, you know, and that's the thing. That's one thing that I think is tough with, like, social media, is everybody wants to make it look great and beautiful, but you also have to tell the truth at the same time.
I think you bring up a good point with kind of taking a step back from your situation, what you may be going through, and looking at it from a bigger picture and finding something that you can be grateful for, like, every single day.
Yeah. Like, you literally could have not woken up that day without that choice. Like, some people just don't wake up when they fall asleep, and they want to be alive the next day. So if you're waking up and your eyes open and you're alive, you should probably be thankful for that. You know what I mean? Because there's some people that just don't have that choice. Just go take a walk down a hospital, or, like, a children's hospital. Like, if you go walk into a children's hospital, none of those kids want to die, you know, or none of them want to be in the hospital with cancer and different things. But you'll notice a lot of them are still smiling, you know, and, like, that's such an easy way to put life into perspective of, like, sometimes you got to look at it through the eyes of, like, a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old kid, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good perspective to have on life in general, is, like, always kind of feel like a child in the way that you're learning and taking in and everything. I've heard that you like motivational speeches.
I do. I do like motivational speeches, yeah.
Is there, like, one that you'd recommend? Or, like, where do you consume this?
I consume a lot of it across YouTube, I would say, you know, and I'm really drawn to anything that makes me feel an emotion, you know, and that can be happy, that can be sad, that can be really anything that is, like, an emotion, you know, and I love consuming that type of content, you know, where it's, you're seeing people, like, striving to do something and then achieving that, or they don't achieve it, but they're still trying to do it, you know, and following along with that kind of stuff, and just listening to people, you know, share their experiences and being inspired by that. Because, like I said earlier, you know, pretty much everybody has a lot of the same types of things going on in their lives. And it, you know, it may be at a different level or in a different context, but a lot of the same things are happening. And, you know, what better way to learn from something than somebody that's already gone through something that you may be going through, or, you know, so that the fact that we have all that technology, I try to embrace that and use it in a way that's good. Right? And then, I used to listen to a lot of, like, old Versus commercials. I don't even know if Versus is, like, it was, like, an old, like, channel thing, but it's, like, they were, like, old sports commercials, just with, like, this really cool voiceover, and it was just quick clips of, like, athletes and people doing extraordinary things, like, living in that moment, whether it was, like, something they won or something they accomplished, and they were all quick cuts, but you could see the expression in all the people's faces, and then mixed with the voiceover just, like, gave you this, like, sense of, I guess, or this will to, like, go out there and succeed. And that's the kind of stuff I like.
Yeah. Well, I think fishing is, like, it's kind of like a miniature life story every single time you go out.
Yeah.
Like, there's misses, there's hope, and then there's failure, and then there's surprises and joy and happiness if you catch something. and that, I think that's really cool to be able to, like, see that on the day-to-day basis, on the micro level, and then to be able to apply that to your life.
Yeah, it is. And it, I think it's definitely a positive thing to have, to be able to, like, process that and take a step back away from it and look at it and be like, oh, you know, like, my day was going downhill really fast, and, you know, I've had several times where I thought that I had, like, career-ending moments. And, you know, 2 or 3 years later, you look back at them and you're like, man, that was actually probably, like, the biggest career-boosting thing that happened to this point. And it was really all just because of the way that I handled those situations, because they probably could have been career-ending. But when you, you know, handle them the right way, they can actually be turned into positive situations.
Looking back at those, what is some advice that you would give yourself, like, if you were on that boat with you 2 years ago?
Well, you know, one of the situations was just real quick. We were fishing on the Mississippi River, which borders Wisconsin and Minnesota, and I culled a fish. So once we catch five fish, catch your sixth one, you're allowed to cull out your smallest one, release it alive, and put a bigger one in. Well, we were allowed to cull in Wisconsin, but not in Minnesota due to their state laws. I thought that I was in Wisconsin. I was on the Wisconsin side of the main river channel, but what I did not realize is that the border actually went through a back channel and didn't follow the main river channel like it does. And so I actually got disqualified after day two. I was leading by 6 pounds. It was just a simple mistake. And so I was open and upfront about it because I wanted people to know, like, what actually happened. I didn't want a bunch of rumors to start. And so I was just very honest and open about that. Looking back at it, it was such an easy problem to solve. Yeah. You know, and I wasn't prepared. I didn't do my homework for that situation. You know, I didn't understand. I thought I knew what was happening, but I didn't actually know. And I think that's, you know, one thing that creates a lot of problems is, like, either a miscommunication or just a misunderstanding without actually knowing the facts. And so, you know, to look back at it, all I had to do was pull up Google Earth and understand exactly where the lines were. Problem solved. But also at the same time, it built a lot of character, and I learned a lot from it, and it made me tougher. And I learned that now I know that, right? Like, what we just talked about, I now know to do my homework and understand if we're fishing border waters or things like that, to really be cautious of my surroundings and know what's going on.
Outside of catching fish, like, what has fishing taught you?
Oh, man. I think patience is a big one. You know, even though I can drive around 70 miles an hour in my boat, that's not always the best way to catch fish. It'll get you there A to B very quickly, but you have to have patience, and, you know, sometimes you have to just let things build. You know, sometimes things happen very quickly on the water. Sometimes it takes all day to get things to build. And so I think patience is probably a very big one. And I think just, like, mental toughness, you know, knowing that just because something's not going your way doesn't mean that you can't change it. You know, I always have the ability to, if, like, in my gut feeling, I feel like I'm not doing the right thing, or I'm not in the right position, I'm not in the right area, I have the ability to change that. You know, and I apply that to a lot of places in my life of, like, if you don't feel comfortable about it, there's a reason you don't feel comfortable about it. You've only got one life. Don't waste it being uncomfortable. Like, put yourself in a position that you actually enjoy it, or, you know, that is going to set you up to be successful.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was doing the research for this one, I came across the video of you fishing with this this other guy, and he didn't speak English at all, but you guys were still able to relate to each other on a certain level. How can we all find that in our life? Because that's something that I crave, is like, how can I relate to this person, or how can I go to this city and still relate to this culture here, even though it's completely different than the culture that I'm brought up in? Because I think once we are able to relate with other people, that's when we kind of start putting down those walls that we build up to harden our hearts against other people and other cultures and stuff like that. Or just based on people's life decisions, we will put up these walls because we can't relate to them on any level. But how do you find something that kind of transcends our personal walls that we put up in order to relate to other people?
Man, I think like the first word that comes to mind is passion. You know, like having a common passion for something. And that's really how what you're referring to happened. You know, we called it the Angler of the Year exchange, or the AOI exchange of 2017. And that came about because I won Angler of the Year in 2017 in the U.S. And Daisuke Aoki, who's from Japan, he won Angler of the Year in Japan in 2017. Had never met the guy ever. We had a mutual friend from Chicago, a guy that imports Japanese tackle, and you know, we're just talking one day and kind of came up with this idea of like, hey, this has never been done before. We've never taken two guys from opposite sides of the world who are both at the top of their game in their countries and put them together on a boat. And it just all of a sudden it just started happening, and it became more and more real. And next thing you know, Daisuke is with me in New York and we're fishing, and I know zero Japanese and he knows zero English. Now we have translators, but you're still like, when you meet somebody for the first time and like you don't even really know how to say hello, or like, you know, you can't communicate verbally. But the most amazing thing was, is that when we were on the water, it was like I was fishing with my best friend. There was no need to verbally communicate. Like, we would move around the boat, around each other. You know, we could just point and talk about things. And because we were both so passionate about the sport and had a good understanding of just the basics of fishing, we were able to communicate without any words. And I think that's something that transcends like across everything, way past just fishing. You know, that just because we come from a different country, a different cultural background, eat different foods, whatever it may be, there's always something that connects all of us. You know, we all bleed red, which is kind of my core thing. Like, there's so many things, and you can find that, like we were kind of talking earlier, joking, like you could take two people from knitting clubs and put them together.
Yeah,
they're gonna find that common passion, right? And like instantly when you find somebody that is equally as passionate about you as the same thing, you have a mutual respect for each other, I think. And because I think passion is something that can drive your life in such a positive way that you're just like naturally drawn to those people that are passionate about the same things. You know, those are people that you want to surround yourself with. And that's, it was a very eye-opening experience for me, because it started out as I thought we were just going to be, you know, two guys fishing together. We're going to film this. We're going to document it, catch some fish. It'll be cool. And it was such an eye-opening experience to like that topic alone, of kind of just understanding that when I was done with that, the only thing that I could feel was that this was bigger than us. And I kind of titled it that, bigger than us, because I felt the feelings that I got was more than just two guys fishing together. Like, it was something that was far above just even fishing in general. Like, it was something that spoke to just human culture and like making you feel human, you know, and kind of back to the basics. Because when you can't verbally communicate, you have to rely on, you know, other sources. And it's honestly one of the coolest things that I've done to this point.
That is really cool. So when you Google your name, that's always a fun way to start a sentence.
Yeah, it's a good one.
The first things that come up are home, truck, and boat. Do you think, like, does that embody you as a person or your identity?
The home one kind of throws me off. That one's kind of funny. I would say so. You know, I think probably the reason for those three things is, one, I drive a big, somewhat fancy boat and truck. And that, I wouldn't say that that's, like, that's my identity. Like, I don't want to be identified as just that. I want to be hopefully more than just that.
What do you aspire to be, like, your character? Like, what is your, what would you want that to be?
I want to be the dude that builds the best content out there around fishing. But, like, on a more serious note of that, I don't have to win, like, all the highest awards and everything. But I want to be able to look back at the sport, like, at fishing, and say that, you know, when I walked away from it, or, like, when I retire from actual competing in it, that it's in a better place than when I started, you know, and to be able to look back and know that I had an impact on that, and that that didn't just happen while I was there, but actually made a difference. And the older I get, the more that, like, spreads outside of fishing, and where I feel like I have this sense of wanting to make a difference, you know, whether it's in, like, one person's life or, like, the entire world.
Yeah.
I just have that aspirations to do that.
Are there certain character attributes that you're focusing on building right now?
Man, my biggest one right now is probably work-life balance. It's like a blessing and a curse of having a crazy amount of drive for, like, work ethic and just wanting to work, partially because I love what I do.
Yeah.
And so I've always wanted to build a life that I felt like I did not need to vacation from.
Yeah.
And that my whole life felt like I was just living in a vacation, you know, and I feel like I've somewhat done that, but not everybody's that way. And so, like, learning how to balance those things, not necessarily for myself, but for all of the other people that I'm surrounded by, you know, and being able to sometimes take a step back and reflect, because it's very easy to get caught up in, like, constantly pushing forward. But sometimes when you do that, you're just pushing yourself up against a wall, and you need to take a step back and figure out how you break that wall down. And, you know, learning how to do that is kind of where I'm at right now. You know, it was like making decisions based on, like, I guess, where you want to be, versus where, like, people think you should be. You know, and really focusing on doing what I feel like is the right thing.
Yeah. So when you're driving your truck across the country, because you drive, like, all the way to, you'd bring your truck and your boat everywhere, don't you?
Yeah, like 40,000 miles a year.
Wow. Okay. So obviously you get a lot of time in the car. What do you tune into? What do you listen to, like, to keep you going?
Oh, man. So I listen to, like, mixtures of things. I'll listen, sometimes it's like Gary Vee stuff or Tom Bilyeu and, you know, some entrepreneur type guys.
Yeah.
Like, Rob Dyrdek is one of my favorite guys to listen to, just because he has, like, such a drive and a work ethic, but, like, a really fun personality, and he's able to combine those two things. And then sometimes I just listen to music. Like, I'm guilty of being a terrible car singer, and that can be country, that can be rap, that can be rock. You know, if you drive 40,000 miles a year, it's pretty hard to listen to just one genre.
Yeah.
And so I found myself, like, tuning into lots of different genres, you know, podcasts, and, sometimes it's just silence, you know, and sometimes I'm on the phone.
What about, you've driven all over the country, obviously. Is there a section of, country that you were surprised by?
The most surprising part of it in a good way is New York, the state of New York. You know, if you haven't been there, everybody thinks New York City and like tons of people and buildings. And that's like 2% of New York. The other 98% of New York is like these massive farm fields and mountains, like the Catskill and Schuylkill Mountains, like that area, the upstate New York is absolutely amazing. And it's like, it's very open and like, they still call, they don't call them towns or cities. They still call them like villages and townships up there. Like, it's, you know, small colonies. Groups of people. It's a really cool, like old heritage. And it's just a beautiful part of the country. Very surprising to me.
Right on. What about when you're gearing up, you got a competition the next day and you're starting to go to bed, but you can't fall asleep because something's on your mind. What keeps you up at night before competitions?
Oh man, I have trouble sleeping more when I have a really good practice versus when I have a terrible practice. And I think it's just the thought of like the anticipation, right? You have this feeling where you think you may be on the winning fish, and then all that doubt starts to come into your mind. Man, what if they leave? What if this happens and they move? Or what if I break the first one off and screw the whole school up? And, you know, that's like when I have trouble sleeping. I've kind of got to the point now where I'm like so busy and I put so much focus into it that by the time I'm ready to go to bed, you know, it's 11:30 at night and I gotta be back up at 4:30. I'm tired enough that I'm just out. I've gotten pretty good at sleeping wherever now.
You don't have nightmares about your like boat breaking down and then using a paddle to get you to the cove and then making a cast and your rod breaking off?
No,
I'm the only one.
Yeah, I really try not to like think about all the bad things that can happen. You know, I really try to like play my day out in a positive manner. And I will sit there and lay down and like think about like my first cast and what it's going to be with, where it's going to be. And like, I always play it out with a positive ending. Doesn't always work out that way, but at least in my mind, I can start it off that way.
Have you ever started formulating your fishing story before it even happens?
100%. All the time. Like, every time I'm rolling up to a big laydown, I'm thinking, like, all right, I'm going to take this crankbait. I'm going to throw it down the right side of that log. It's going to bump into two stumps. Fish is going to choke it. It's going to be sideways. It's going to come up. It's going to jump and head shake and tail walk. It's going to go back down. I'm going to lip it. It's going to be like a 7-pounder. And it's going to be like the most epic fish catch ever. All the time.
See, I do this too. But the difference between you and me is I've never caught the fish that I'm targeting. So...
Like I'm so bad about that exact subject that even like today flying in the airplane coming down here, I look and I'm like, man, I want, like, what if that valley was underwater? Like, what if that mountain was underwater? Like, where would the fish be sitting? Like, how would I target that? Like everything I drive by, I'm like, oh, look at that bridge. Like, that'd be a good place for a big bass to hang out.
Oh my gosh, that's epic. What's your favorite feature to look for?
Favorite feature?
Yeah, like when you're fishing, do you guys call it features? Like
structure, cover. Yeah. I like ambush points.
Describe to the layman out there who might not understand what that is.
So an ambush point, you know, it's kind of like the guy in the back alley that doesn't want you to know he's there, and you don't know he's there. He's got an ambush point on you. He's like hiding by the dumpster.
Typically not a good thing.
So it's not a good thing. So if you were the bait fish and he was the bass, he would have an ambush point. So it's usually anything. A bass is an ambush feeder. They like to hide or feel secure in cover. And when an opportunity, like a little fish swims by or something, or a crawdad scoots in front of them, they can pop out and they can eat it and then they can kind of go back to safety. So they're a predator fish, but they're opportunistic feeders. They like to ambush. So that can be like a bluff wall that they can hide next to. That can be like a lay down log or a dock or a weed line, or, you know, just something that they can hide around so that what they're trying to eat doesn't see it coming.
Yeah. So that's your favorite little nut. You find those little spots,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah. I always try to find little ambush points, and the more ambush points you can get together, the better. You know, nice weed line with a tree in there. Maybe there's a dock over the log, close to deep water access.
That's like your dream
recipe
spot.
For disaster.
I love it, man. All right, well, let's wrap this one up with a simple, easy question. Who are you listening to right now when you're fishing?
Who am I listening to right now? I've kind of been on like a Cody Jinx kick lately. It's like kind of red dirt country, outlaw country kind of stuff. Kind of been mixed on him. And then, man, who else would I be listening to right now? I've been listening to a lot of Zade Wolf this year. Not a lot of people have heard of him.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
But he's kind of like a little bit of rock kind of in there, but he's cool dude.
Right on. Sweet, man. Well, you know what? The sun is going down, and there's this river right here. You want to see if we get into something?
Yeah, I already bought my license, so this is happening.
Right on, man. All right, well, thanks for your time.
Cool. Thanks, man.
Dude, I was like shivering. I should have worn my jacket. Dude, I was like trying not to let the mic. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you want to learn more about this series, make sure to subscribe to Be Alive on their YouTube or podcast app. You can also find them on other social channels. I'm Zach Shellhammer, and until the next one, stay stoked.